Welcome everybody to this second audio where we are considering the dispensational elements, the things that Paul writes about in Thessalonians. In our first epistle, we read 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 13 to 18, and 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. These passages contain very, very strong dispensational subjects, things, if you will. Listen to this verse, 1 Thessalonians 4, 16. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven. Did you know that was a very, very Old Testament dispensational thing? The Lord had descended to Israel in the past. Not only does 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 say that the Lord was descending out from heaven, but he was descending out from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel. A shout, a voice, coming out of heaven. These things can be found in Israel's history and prophecy. And of course in this verse we have, and with the trumpet of God. Oh, trumpets are very, very Old Testament. They're very strongly set in a dispensation of God for the world and the earth. And of course, the dead in Christ shall rise first. We wouldn't want to think, would we, that every resurrection in the Bible was about the church, which is his body. Last lesson, remember, we looked at the resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 and found that was to the restored nation of Israel. The resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 certainly isn't to heavenly places. And of course, Corinthians, the resurrection there was accompanied by a trumpet as well. In Corinthians, which was underscored by the feasts given to Israel, Paul was looking for the great fulfillment of the prophecies of Isaiah and Hosea. So, as we further consider these elements in Thessalonians, these dispensational elements, we are considering the types, the foreshadowings of the Old Testament. And we have every right to do this because the very words themselves take us back to Israel's history. And Paul said in Acts 26:22, long after Thessalonians was written, that having obtained help from God, he stood until that day, witnessing both to small and great, saying no other things than those which the prophets and Moses said was going to happen. If that is Paul's self-confessed ministry all the way to Acts 26, then I believe we certainly will be able to see the dispensational elements of Thessalonians back in Moses and the prophets. If we can find the features of Thessalonians mapped out for our benefit in the Old Testament, then it is up to us as sincere students of the Word to consider that maybe the setting of Thessalonians is the precise setting of these foreshadowings and these types of the Old Testament. Last lesson we considered the feasts given to Israel, and if the feasts given to Israel mapped out God's purposes for that great and mighty nation, and one of those feasts was the Feast of Trumpets, then perhaps Matthew and Corinthians and Thessalonians and the book of Revelation are all about the same purpose of God for the world through that great nation of Israel. It would not be wise biblical understanding to assume that every trumpet in the Old Testament and the New belonged to Israel, save for the one exception of 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. God bless you as you consider these things, and remember, don't believe this speaker or anybody else for that matter. We must rightly divide the word of truth, as Paul wrote to Timothy, so that we shall not be ashamed, and that we shall be approved, not corporately, because we belong to any particular denomination or persuasion, but because we have examined to see if these things are in fact so. In this lesson, we're going back to Israel's history. We're going back to look at their typical salvation, to find the feasts, and to see trumpets in that setting. We're going to find many of the things mentioned in Thessalonians abounding in a couple of chapters that I would like the listener to read right now. Would you please pause this audio and read Exodus 19 and Exodus 24. The first thing we need to appreciate in the matter of Israel's feasts is that they were not simply calendar events. Again, for those listeners who have not a copy of the feasts, the chart on the feasts of Leviticus 23, you can go to our website, www.bibleunderstanding.com/feasts.htm. There you can see the feasts, and you can also download a PDF version, your own personal copy. The feasts were in fact acted out in Israel's typical salvation. God showed by the life of the nation of Israel what these feasts represented. This is not a mini-series on the feasts, but it is important to see them in Israel's typical salvation so that we have God's explanation of them in type and shadow, and we can consequently see the reality as pertaining to Israel and their real salvation, instead of automatically applying the feasts to the church, which is his body, and Christians today in 2008. Here are those feasts: Passover, unleavened bread, Pentecost, trumpets, the great day of atonement, tabernacles and booths. These were acted out in Israel's wonderful deliverance from Gentile dominion in Egypt to their establishment as God's people in God's land, the great land of Israel. Now, if that's the setting in the Old Testament, it may not surprise us to find that that is the dispensational setting of the feasts in the New Testament. Passover and unleavened bread were acted out in Egypt, and as Exodus 19 begins, in the third month, Israel arrived at Mount Sinai. This coincides approximately to the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost. Pentecost or Weeks was seven Sabbaths plus one day, counting from the second day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Israel arrived at the base of the mountain, and they dwelt there for quite some time. In this location, preparations took place to enable them to become the kingdom of priests that God intended them to be. It was in this time of Israel's typical salvation that supernatural gifts were given. The Holy Spirit came upon individual Israelites, giving them supernatural ability to make these garments and to build the tabernacle and all the fine work required for the furniture and implements of the tabernacle. You can read about those supernatural gifts in Exodus 28 and 31. Pentecost is a feast of first fruit, a foretaste of those things which will come in at the Feast of Trumpets, Atonement and Tabernacles. A small measure, a foretaste of the special things that will be abundant in the kingdom when those last group of feasts come into fruition. At typical Pentecost in Exodus, the gifts given were to prepare and help in preparations for Israel to enter into the kingdom. And that's exactly the same setting of Acts chapter 2. Pentecost is the last of the spring feasts, the first group, and it anticipates all that the last group, the summer fall feasts, represent. The second group of feasts, which begins with trumpets. Pentecost anticipates Israel's glorification in the kingdom. Pentecost is never the birthday of a church, but the final of the first group of feasts that looks forward to the glorious culmination of God's purpose for the world through this nation of Israel. Now that we recognize the events of Exodus around Mount Sinai are in fact typical Pentecost, we begin to appreciate some of the wonderful features of this chapter 19 and 24. Let's begin, and as we progress through this chapter, would the listener please acknowledge that many of the features of Thessalonians are seen here in Israel's history. And again, I strongly suggest that if these features of Thessalonians can be found in Israel's history, then Thessalonians should be considered as an exposition by Paul in anticipation of a glorious fulfillment of the last group of feasts. Which last group begins with the Feast of Trumpets? Thessalonians is not written anticipating the introduction of the church, which is his body. Exodus 19:3-6 disclose some very important features. Verse 3, "And Moses went up to God, and Jehovah called to him out of the mountain, saying, You shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the sons of Israel." Ah yes, God speaking directly to the people of Israel with his voice. Verse 4 continues, "You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." Israel, a called out company, redeemed to God, to serve God. Verse 5, "And now if you will obey my voice indeed, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure to me above all the nations, for all the earth is mine." Ah, not heavenly places here, is it? In typical Pentecost, the purpose that God expressly reveals is the earth, the entire world, being his. Verse 6, "And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the sons of Israel." Who was destined to be a kingdom of priests? Who is it, indeed, to be a peculiar treasure above all the other nations? Certainly not the church, which is his body, but Israel. The listener might like to compare Isaiah 61 verse 6, 1 Peter chapter 2 verse 5 and verse 9, Revelation chapter 1 verse 6, chapter 5 verse 10, and chapter 20 verse 6. None of which passages have anything to do dispensationally with us today in 2008. Returning to Exodus 19 verse 5, we see a covenant mentioned. This is a conditional covenant that God is about to introduce. A covenant introduced as the Lord descends out of heaven to a holy mountain, with a trumpet blast, with clouds, with a shout, with a voice, with angels, with an earthquake, and darkness, and flaming fire. as we shall see in the Exodus foreshadowing of Israel's glory. Now, if all these things belong to Israel, I wonder who they belong to when we find most of them in the book of Thessalonians. Yes, indeed. In Israel's typical salvation, the Lord descended to a mountain at a trumpet's blast and brought in a conditional covenant. I wonder if indeed, in the day of Israel's restoration, when the Lord descends to a holy mountain, that he will bring in that wonderful new covenant of Jeremiah 31, which was also made with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. These covenants were not made between the God of Israel and the church, which is his body. Oh dear, how confused we become when we take the new covenant as belonging to us and the fulfillment of the Feast of Trumpet as belonging to us as well. In verse 8 of Exodus 19, we find the children of Israel complying with this covenant, doing so rather rapidly and in their own strength. And all the people answered together and said, "All that the Lord has spoken we will do." And Moses returned the words of the people to Jehovah. Verse 9 continues, "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Lo, I come to you in a thick cloud.'" Another element of Thessalonians and everywhere else in the Bible in the matter of the Lord's coming. "That the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever." And Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. Exodus 19 is the glass darkly. Thessalonians is the clear, bright reality. Exodus 19 is the Lord descending out of heaven in the sight of all Israel. Of course, ultimately he will descend out of heaven in the sight of the entire world. No gentle Jesus, meek and mild, at the second coming of the Lord, at the fulfillment of the Feast of Trumpets. Continuing Exodus 19, verses 10 through 13. "And the Lord said to Moses, 'Go to the people and sanctify them today and tomorrow, and let them wash their clothes, and be ready for the third day. For the third day the Lord will come down in the sight of all the people upon Mount Sinai. And you shall set bounds to the people round about, saying, Take heed to yourselves, do not go up into the mountain or touch the border of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall be surely put to death. There shall not be a hand to touch it, but that he shall surely be stoned or shot through, whether beast or man, it shall not live. When the trumpet sounds long, they shall come up to the mountain." And here's our first reference to a trumpet, linked with a holy mountain. Yes, as we have shown, Pentecost is a feast of first fruits. It anticipates the final group of feasts, which begins with trumpets. And here trumpets sounds its voice, and the Lord descends to a mountain in the wilderness, which anticipates a holy mountain in the future. The holy mountain of Zion. Ah yes, Zechariah, that wonderful prophecy about the day of the Lord, the very subject of the book of Revelation, which features seven trumpets. And the last trumpet is the Lord returning to the earth when the kingdoms of the world become his. Yes, says Zechariah in chapter 14, "Behold, the day of the Lord comes. And in that day," verse 4 says, "his feet shall stand on the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And down in verse 9 of this very chapter, "And Jehovah shall be king over all the earth. In that day there shall be one Jehovah, and his name shall be one." In Israel's history, in their typical salvation, the Lord descended out of heaven to a holy mountain at the voice of a trumpet. In prophecy, the Lord takes the kingdoms of the world as he descends out of heaven at the last trumpet. And of course, in Joshua chapter 6, when the Feast of Trumpets was typically foretold, Jericho fell at the last trumpet. If we have the Lord descending out of heaven to Israel and standing on a holy mountain at the sound of a trumpet, in Israel's history and in Israel's prophecy, then that should be the context of our understanding in the book of Thessalonians. I hope to amplify these features and see them in a whole range of scriptures as they relate to Israel as this series progresses. But for now, let's return to Exodus 19 for one or two other features of interest. Features that we find in Israel's typical redemption and in the books of Thessalonians. Returning to Exodus 19, reading verse 16 through 19. Verse 16, "And it happened on the third day in the morning that there were thunders and lightnings and a thick cloud upon the mountain. And the voice of the trumpet was exceedingly loud, so that all the people in the camp trembled." Ah yes, this trumpet in Israel's typical redemption, when the Lord descended out of heaven, was not a silent trumpet for a select few. Continuing verse 17, "And Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the lower part of the mountain." Israel as a nation was gathered at the base of the mountain to meet their God when he descended out of heaven with a trumpet blast in flaming fire on top of a mountain. I am absolutely certain that my listener is anticipating Matthew chapter 24, verse 29 through 31. Verse 18, "And Mount Sinai was smoking, all of it, because the Lord came down upon it in fire. And the smoke of it went up like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly." Exodus 19:19, "And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and became very strong, Moses spoke, and God answered him by a voice." Look at these wonderful dispensational elements. The third day, the voice of the trumpet, a cloud, thunders and lightnings, Israel meeting their God, the Lord coming down in fire, the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaking greatly. Consider these things, if you will. A trumpet, a voice, a gathering. I believe we'll find these things in the book of Thessalonians, the first, chapter 4. The Lord descending out of heaven. That's exactly what Paul says is taking place. If Exodus 19 is about the Lord descending to the earth at a trumpet blast and Israel being gathered unto him, and that's the setting of Matthew 24, I wonder if that's the setting of Thessalonians. My listener might like to anticipate Hebrews chapter 12 and remember Revelation 16 around verse 18, where there are also voices and thunders and lightnings and an earthquake. Wow, Revelation sounds a lot like Exodus 19, doesn't it? When the Lord descended to the earth at a trumpet blast. And of course, in Revelation chapter 6, the kings of the earth and great men calling on the rocks and the hills to hide them from him sitting on the throne and the wrath of the Lamb. Yes, indeed, friends, this is the setting of all these elements in Israel's typical and prophetic salvation. So when we read these same things in the books of Thessalonians, I think it is theological gymnastics to start saying that they refer to God's purposes for the heavenly places. If we leave these elements in the setting that God put them in the beginning, then we are well placed to understand not only the New Testament, but the twofold dispensational division of the letters of the Apostle Paul. Let us return to Exodus 19, verses 19 and 20. And when the voice of the trumpet sounded long and became very strong, Moses spoke, and God answered him by a voice. Remember, this is the Lord descending in flaming fire upon Mount Sinai with a trumpet and a voice. It does remind us of 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, doesn't it? The Lord descending out of heaven with a shout and the voice of the archangel and a trumpet blast. Verse 20, and Jehovah came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. Isn't it amazing? We have a twofold gathering, if you will, in Exodus 19. The nation of Israel was gathered at the base of the mountain, but Moses went up onto the mountain to meet the Lord as he descended out of heaven. Exodus 19 is an anticipation, is prophecy in action. Remember, Exodus 19 was at the time of the Feast of Weeks or Pentecost. Pentecost was a feast of anticipation. It looked forward to that last group of feasts, which began with the Feast of Trumpets. And here, as Israel experienced Pentecost, typically there was a foreshadowing of the great return of the Lord to the earth to set up Israel as that kingdom of priests. Here in Exodus 19 is this wonderful setting that God has embedded in his word about Israel and his purpose for the world through them. He descends with a trumpet blast, in fire, in clouds, with lightning, with earthquakes, and it's all about Israel, a peculiar people, indeed a treasure above all people, for all the earth is the Lord's, a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. And if that's the setting in the Old Testament of these dispensational things, then perhaps that's the setting of Thessalonians as well. In Exodus 19:24, we read these words, and the Lord said to him, away, you go down, and you shall come up, you and Aaron with you. But do not let the priests and the people break through to come up to the Lord, lest he break forth upon them. Here it wasn't only Moses who was permitted to go up and meet the Lord on the mountain. Aaron went up to meet the Lord as well. And this verse speaks about a distinction within the nation of Israel. Moses and Aaron were a selected group, a remnant out of the entire nation. this chosen remnant were blessed and permitted to go up onto the mountain and meet the Lord. The rest of the nation were gathered at the base of the mountain when the Lord descended. This is the situation as we read it in Romans chapter 9. Paul and those saved with him in that time belong to an elect remnant who would have the same privilege as Moses and Aaron. In Thessalonians, they would go up to meet the Lord, while the rest of the nation of Israel would be gathered when his feet touched that Mount of Olives. This brings us to Exodus chapter 24. In this chapter we find that not only Moses and Aaron were privileged to go up the mountain and see the Lord, but there were others as well. Exodus 24 verse 1 says, "And he said to Moses, Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and bow yourselves afar off." Exodus 24 verse 9 says this, "And Moses went up, and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and they saw the God of Israel. And there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of a sapphire stone, and as the essence of the heavens for clearness. And upon the nobles of the sons of Israel he did not lay his hands. Also they saw God, and ate and drank." They saw the God of Israel, who had descended out of heaven with a trumpet blast, and fire, and clouds, and earthquakes, and lightnings, and a voice. And this is the setting of this coming of the Lord in Israel's typical salvation. And I believe we should also leave it as the context of Thessalonians, which is Paul anticipating the great feast of trumpets, where all this that took place typically will happen in glorious reality. Here we have a privileged remnant who went up and saw the Lord in all his glory. The nation of Israel simply heard a voice and saw him descend to the mountain. But these privileged few saw his glory at close quarters. They went up to meet him. I'm sure my listener can remember that Isaiah saw the Lord lifted up and his train filled the temple in Isaiah chapter 6. I'm sure my listener can remember that Ezekiel saw the Lord in all his glory, and the cherubim and the wheels within wheels. I'm sure my listener can remember the Mount of Transfiguration, where again an inner group, an elect remnant, saw the Lord in his glory. These sights of the Lord were an anticipation of his glory on the earth in the eyes of all people. Yes, indeed, remember again the book of Revelation, where at the last trumpet the Lord will be seen. The heavens will roll up like a scroll, and there he is, seated at the right hand of power, and coming in glory, majestically. And in Exodus, here a remnant were privileged to see the great anticipation of this second coming of the Lord. They saw him in his majesty, in a dispensational setting of the Lord descending out of heaven with a trumpet. And in Thessalonians, likewise, in the same setting, an elect remnant will go up to meet him in his glory as he descends to the earth with a trumpet blast, and his feet will stand in that day on the Mount of Olives. This is all about the God of Israel, Abraham's son, David's son, raised to sit on David's throne. Remember this verse in Exodus 24? It's a stunning verse. Verse 10, "And they, that little company, saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of a sapphire stone, and as the essence of the heavens for clearness." Let's conclude this second audio by reading a passage or two out of the book of Revelation. Would the listener please hear in these passages the dispensational elements of the book of Exodus and the same dispensational elements in Thessalonians? Revelation chapter 4, verse 1. "After these things I looked, and behold, a door was opened in heaven, and the first voice which I heard was as it were of a trumpet, talking with me, saying, Come up here, and I will show you what must occur after these things." Verse 5. "And out of the throne came lightnings and thunderings and voices. And seven lamps of fire were burning in front of the throne, which are the seven spirits of God." Verse 6. "And a sea of glass was in front of the throne like crystal, and in the midst of the throne and around the throne were four living creatures, or cherubim, full of eyes in front and behind." Here is the Lord in his glory, with this great sea of glass, very, very reminiscent to that which the elect remnant saw in Exodus 24. Now let's go to Revelation chapter 15. Verse 2 says, "And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire." Ah yes, again, another element we find in the book of Exodus. Flaming fire. "And those who had gotten the victory over the beast, and over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God. And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, Great and marvellous are your works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are your ways, O King of saints." Verse 5. "And after these things I looked, and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony was opened in heaven." Verse 8, "And the temple was filled with the smoke of the glory of God, and from his authority, and no one was able to enter into the temple." We read about the smoke of the Lord's glory on Mount Sinai. And it was on Mount Sinai that Moses was given the instructions for the tabernacle for Israel. Moses was given the instructions, the pattern for the tabernacle, on Mount Sinai, at the time of Pentecost. Pentecost was a first fruit, a feast of anticipation. And Israel's tabernacle anticipated greater glory of not only the temple to be built in the millennium, but the great new Jerusalem that was to descend to the earth. All these dispensational things, trumpets, clouds, fire, smoke, the Lord descending out of heaven to a mountain, a pattern for a tabernacle, a sight of the Lord in glory, a voice, a meeting by an elect remnant, a gathering of Israel. All of these things belong to God's purposes for the earth. They belong to Israel, the great dispensation of the kingdom of heaven on the earth. We have the temple in heaven, the sea of glass, the song of Moses, voices, lightnings, earthquakes, thunders, trumpets. All that Exodus anticipated, the book of Revelation records as coming in glorious reality. The Lord becoming King of kings and Lord of lords over all the earth. And if in Exodus and prophecy and the book of Revelation, these dispensational things belong to God's purposes for the world through Israel on the earth, then I think it's time we considered that that's the setting when we read of the same things in the books of Thessalonians. I think it's time we really believed what the Apostle Paul said. In Acts 26:22, when he is testifying about his own conversion, when he is giving evidence about the very commission that Christ gave him, he says that in verse 19, he was not disobedient to the heavenly vision. And in verse 22, which was spoken years after Thessalonians was written, having obtained help from God, I stand until this day, says Paul, witnessing both to small and great, saying no other things than those which the prophets and Moses said was going to happen. That's the setting of Thessalonians. And we create confusion, abysmal, when we drag the later truth of Ephesians back into this testimony of Paul and the book of Thessalonians. The dispensational truths of Ephesians were not known by Paul in Acts 26:22. So much for the progressive revelation theory that abounds, regrettably, in some divisions of dispensational teaching. Thessalonians is not the dispensational setting of Ephesians. It can be found in Israel's history, their prophecy, and their glorious future. And if Thessalonians belongs to Israel, then that's where we, as right dividers, should leave it. May God bless each and every one of us as we go forward next lesson, looking more closely at some of these elements, these dispensational things of Thessalonians.